Okay, so Bezrat Hashem, this is the second session for Hilchot Chametz. A question came up, which we didn't cover last time, on the cleaning of the bookshelves, Sefarim. How do you deal with the Sefarim that were used during the week, and they might have Chametz in them? How do you clean them for Pesach? Now, again, this also follows the same halach that we mentioned yesterday, that there is a halachic way of doing it, and there is a way that people do it. As long as they do it happily, it's nice and good. The bookshelves need to be cleaned, because many times, especially if you have kids, kids run around with their food, and many times a good place to stuff and hide their food is in the bookshelf. Believe it or not. If you have kids, you know that that's what happens. Okay, and there are things that they play with, Cheerios, and this and that. So the bookshelves definitely need to be cleaned. How do you clean the bookshelves? You clean the way you want. You could pull out all the Sefarim and clean behind them. Or you could just pull out some Sefarim and use your vacuum cleaner spout, the pipe, and stick it between the Sefarim and make sure there's nothing there. Now, and the top of the books also, you could take a little shemata and wipe off the top of the Sefarim, make sure no Cheerios or any food is stuck there. That is how you clean the bookshelf itself, but it definitely is a place that Chametz tends to hide. Cleaning the Sefarim themselves, one is not required to do. Okay, halachically, you're not required to do that. It's brought down that a person should be careful during the year not to eat food over his Sefarim. If there are some Sefarim that you think that you are going to use, definitely, those you could bring it out and dust it off and shake it off a little bit, make sure there's no crumbs on it. Other Sefarim, you don't have to do that. There are those who go, I know there are some people who go through their Sefarim page by page. Okay, you could imagine it will take hours, if not days, to do that, but you're not obligated to do that. You just, if there's Sefarim that you think you know you're going to use, you could take it out and take him out, shake him off, and wipe him off maybe with the shemata. You know, if there's no chametz, should be stuck on the cover. Otherwise, you don't have to shake off the rest of the Sefarim. All you have to do is to make sure that during Pesach, when you want to bring a sefer, do not bring it to the table. So if you want to do learning, don't do it on your table, so no crumbs, if there is any crumbs, would fall on the table. Those crumbs are not a problem because they are batel. You say kol chamira, even if there are some crumbs. You're not going to eat those crumbs anyway because you don't bring it to the table, so it won't fall into your food. And you don't have to worry about anything. If you happen to open one sefer and happen to see some crumbs on it, nothing to worry about in Pesach. You just walk out and blow it off, and zehu, you are not over baliyore balimatze, it's afra ba'alma, it's only dust, because it's crumbs that are very little, nothing to worry about, you don't have to freak out. If you just happen to see something, you blow it off. But either you have to clean those sefarim that you might bring to the table, and the sefarim that you didn't clean, you did not bring them to the table, and learn on the side, and no problem. That should be fine with your sefarim. That's all you have to do. Okay, I would like to devote some time on the concept of Mechirat Chametz. What can be sold, what a person, it's better, preferable that a person should not sell. What's this whole idea of Mechirat Chametz and how it works? We mentioned that the reason that we do all this cleaning is in order that when it comes the time of Bedikat Chametz, there will be no chametz around, or at least not so much chametz around. So bedikat chametz would not be too tedious. The point of bedikat chametz is because the Torah says, "Hashmitu seor mibatechem." We have to get rid of chametz in our possessions. That primarily takes place when a person says kol chamira, because the point of saying kol chamira is to be mebatel chametz, to nullify the chametz, to say chametz is not of any value to me, according to Perichadash, according to some Rishonim, the chametz has to become hefker. That means a person makes it actually hefker. So that's why when we say those lines of kol chamira, we say it, when we say three times, The reason we say three times, by the way, is because anything that you want to make sure that you mean, you say three times. You don't have to do three times. Three times is in order to show that I really mean it. So that's why we say Kol Chamira three times. The same reason when you sit down to do Hatara Nedarim, you say Mutarim Lachem, Mutarim Lachem, Mutarim Lachem. Why do you say three times? One time is enough. And then I mean it. In case the first time I didn't really mean it, I was spacing out, whatever it is. No, I do mean it. So too we say Kol Chamira three times. So Rav Ovadia brings down that the third time, we should include the word Hefker into the line. The first two times you say that any chametz that I have seen or haven't seen, or anything chametz that I destroyed or didn't destroy, any chametz basically that's in my possession, left in my possession, should be nullified, should become batel, which means should become of no value to me. It's dirt, earth. I don't care about it. It has no value to me. Soon it's going to become asur b'hana'ah to me anyway. The Torah says I cannot benefit from it anyway. So soon it's going to become asur b'hana'ah anyway. So therefore it has no of no significance to me. The third time you say it should have no significance to me and become hefker. Hefker means ownerless. That means I don't own it anymore. So that is primarily the way we get rid of our chametz. However, for a couple of reasons, Chachamim came along and they said you should physically get rid of the chametz. For two reasons. A, there might be some chametz that is expensive. You have a nice bottle of whiskey, which is very expensive. And as much as you stand there and you say, yeah, it should be worthless and it should be hefker, you know, you don't really mean it. Maybe you don't mean it. Maybe deep down, maybe you don't mean it. Right? Or, even if you do mean it, if you keep it around, chances are that you might mistakenly come to eat it. Because since chametz is something that we are very friendly with, it is not like an unkosher food that we stay away from, but rather we are very much in favor of chametz the whole year. Comes Pesach, people subconsciously, unconsciously, might take a piece of chametz that's around and put it in their mouth. So Chachamim said for these reasons, even though halachically you got rid of the chametz by saying Kol Chamira, because you made it not yours anymore, you should physically get rid of it too. Physically get rid of it means you should look for it and get rid of it, destroy it. So we are supposed to do bedikat chametz the night of the 14th to make sure no chametz is around, everything is out of my possession, and therefore I won't be over the isur of bal yirai bal yimatze, and I will not by mistake come to eat it. Therefore everything will be nice and good. So I should get rid of it the night of bedikat chametz, meaning do bedika and burn it the next day. In order that we should make that bedikah easy, so we come and we clean up the house in advance. Otherwise, bedikah and getting rid of all that chametz the night of 14th would take a long time. So therefore, we do all this cleaning up beforehand to make the bedikah easier. This is how the cleaning and the bedikah and the burning and the bitul come, you know, that's where everything falls into place. Now, there are some chametz that people have a very difficult time getting rid of physically, right? Like that bottle of whiskey, that you really have to dump it down the drain. You don't want to do that. Or throw it into the fire. You don't want to do that. You know, all that alcohol, you know, what a waste of alcohol, that it should go to waste, it should get destroyed. And people have a difficult time doing that. On the other hand, they also have a difficult time halachically being mebatel and say that bottle of whiskey is ka'afra de'ara. Yeah, right. It will be hefker, you know. Down the street, there are many people who are waiting for you to say that, you know. only if they would know what you're saying. All those people who line up by the liquor store, you know, all the Saturday nights or Friday nights. All those people, only if they understand, they would hear what you mean to say, that it should all be hefker, they'll be lining up by your door to take it. So you don't really mean it. Maybe you don't mean it. Therefore, Chachamim came along with another solution. Now, this solution, you understand, was a very rare situation in the past. In the past, years ago, 200 years ago, people did not keep any chametz before Pesach. There was no chametz that could stay over Pesach. it would get spoiled. It would get stale, right? They didn't have preservatives in their food, right? What they had is what they baked and they ate. If you leave it, let it sit for a week, it's like a bread, pita, you leave outside for a week. It will become either moldy or it will dry and nobody wants it. So nobody had any reason to keep any chametz over Pesach. The people who kept chametz over Pesach were the storekeepers who used to sell beers or whiskey, for that matter. And these are the things that are made out of chametz. These are the things that would remain, would be preserved. And these are the things that if you get rid of, it's going to take another 2, 3, 4 months to make it. So Chachamim came along and they said, what are we going to do with this? They're going to have all these chametz that they can't get rid of. It is hefted merubeh. It's a big loss for people. So therefore, someone who is in that situation, or someone who happened to have in the house, and like how many storekeepers do you have who have liquor store? Chachamim won't make a takana for, you know, one liquor store per town. For one guy, they're not going to make a takana. They're going to say, well, do whatever you want. You know, sell all your chametz. Sell it out. Make a big sale. Blow out sale before Pesach. Sell everything out. And then after Pesach, go on vacation for a couple of weeks, nice and good, and then buy a new shipment and start all over again. Maybe. But there are people who might have these things in the house too. So Chachamim came up with the takana that a person who has some kind of a chametz that he has a very difficult time getting rid of, it will allow him to sell it to the goy. Now, selling it to the goy means that the sale has to be unconditional, because if the sale is conditional, then the sale could become easily nullified and the chametz will end up back in the possession of the Jew during Pesach, which causes many problems. Therefore, how the Mechirat Chametz, the sale, should take place is very interesting, because as time goes on, now generally when you have a household who happens to have 2 barrels of beer, right, and they don't want to get rid of, so they go to their Goyishan neighbor, they're going to say, listen, I have these 2 barrels of beer, okay, can I sell it to you? I can't do anything about it. And the goy is going to say, well, you're going to sell it to me. Well, I don't need it. I don't drink it. He said, listen, I could sell it to you, and then you could sell it to whoever you want. Right? After Pesach, I probably need beer myself. Maybe if you want to sell it back, if you decide to sell it back, you sell it back to me. Maybe I'll buy it from you. So a goy feels that, you know what, why not? I'll buy it. I'll keep it for a week. Then I sell it for a profit. People would do that. They flip houses like that. They do a lot of this kind of buying and selling. I'll buy it, and I sell it for profit. Why not? So the goy might do that. Okay, so it happened 1 year. The problem is, when you have many, many people who want to do this kind of sale, many households, as the baked goods and the all these chametz that come in boxes multiplied in the society over the years, everything that we buy stays on the shelf for a number of months. So people end up having a lot of chametz before Pesach. And if they want to get rid of all that chametz, it's a lot of chametz to get rid of. So they have to sell it. If everyone wants to sell their chametz, they're not going to find so easily someone to make that deal with. So they didn't know how to make the deal either. They didn't know how to make a deal that it should be valid. So they worked it out that they're going to come to the rabbi. Rabbi will become their agent to sell the chametz. And the rabbi will go as a shadchan to the goy that he knows, and he makes the deal. Now, the goy realizes that the deal that the rabbi is making with him is a multi-thousand-dollar deal. You're talking about, I don't know, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, maybe $100,000. You know, the rabbi of the city, he became agent of selling the chametz of the whole city, you might be talking about a tremendous amount of money. So how would a goy agree to do this? So as the situation became bigger, the deal became a little bit more shady. What goy would come and make such a deal? You know, all this chametz. And worse, many of these goyim, they don't know where the chametz is, what the chametz is, where they're stored. You give them a whole stack of papers you know, the documents indicating each person's chametz, where it is. The goy doesn't even know the addresses. He's going to have to go to collect in everybody's house. They do that. Okay, so as it became a little bit shady, the Rabbanim became much more diligent to make sure that the deal is a real deal with the goy. They make sure that the goy understands the deal is a real deal. Because at the end of the day, the goy will buy whatever, buys X, and he sells X with a profit. So, in the market, it makes sense. I don't care what it is. You give me whatever it is, the value of it will determine once we want to go through the whole thing, but I could buy it and sell it. I have no problem. As long as legally and halachically that chametz comes into my possession and it's mine, I'll buy it and I sell it for a profit. If the goy understands that, so he's not going to be worried so much as to, how am I going to come up with $100,000 worth of money, $100,000 cash to be able to pay for all this? What am I going to do with all this chametz? Where am I going to store it? What am I going to do with it? If you tell the goy that chances are these Jews themselves need chametz after Pesach, if the goy understands the market, he understands that these Jews probably will want to buy back the chametz. So I have customers. So I checked out the market. I see there are customers. There will be customers in the market. It's worth it for me to buy it and sell it. So that is the logic behind the sale. Now, as the sale became more widespread, more things got included into the sale. For example, when a person wants to sell it, so he sells his closed box of Cheerios. Makes sense. There's a set market value for it. It's clear, it's closed, everybody could buy it, sell it on the eBay, right? But how about an open box of Cheerios? Can you sell that on the eBay for anything? Maybe bird food, bird feed? What are you going to sell it for? How about half bottle of eaten ketchup? Half eaten bottle of ketchup? Right? Then it becomes nitty gritty. How about the chametz that is stuck on the dishes? That's also included. Why would the goy want to buy chametz that's stuck on the dishes? What is he going to do with it? How is he going to get it off the dishes? He's going to come and start scraping that chametz and take it away with himself. How is he going to do that? So we do include it. What's the logic behind it? The logic behind it is because the goy is doing a wholesale, a whole buy. So in the whole buy, the wholesale business, I'll buy it. Listen, I buy the whole thing. A bulk. There's such a thing called bulk. You know, people do that with all these discount stores. They go to the company and they buy stuff bulk. And then they sort it out and some of the stuff they throw out. Overall, they're making profit. So it's worth it for them to do that. So therefore, once you're making such a big deal, in other words, a goy, an individual goy, who wants to buy an individual Jew's chametz, 5 bucks of Cheerios, and you say, well, I'm going to give you for those 5 bucks of Cheerios all the chametz that's stuck on my dishes, the goy is going to say, I don't need it. Just give me 5 bucks of Cheerios, here's $10. Thank you, that's it. I don't need any more. But when you're making such a big deal, it's a big deal of the whole city, it's much easier to throw in all those worthless chametz as a part of, this is a bulk deal. You buy it bulk, you throw out whatever you don't want, on the things that you buy, you're going to make a profit. So it would make it understandable by the goy to do that. So that is how it evolved. Now, it is understood that after everything is said and done, this deal is as good as the understanding of the goy. If the goy thinks it's a joke, as much as the rabbi makes the goy feel that it's a real thing, if the goy really feels it's a joke, it might still be in his mind a joke. So therefore, there are people who do not take a risk of selling a real chametz to the goy. Because in case a 1% chance or 1 in 1,000 chance, it's not a full-fledged sale, I don't want to be stuck with that chametz in my possession. So they get rid of their chametz. How do they get rid of their chametz? They either eat it, they sell it, physically sell it, I don't know, sell it to the store, see if anybody buys it, or they donate it to chesed organizations, and this way they deducted from their tzedakah money, from their maaser money, and they're good. They have nothing, no chametz in their possessions. That is the most recommended thing. If people can't do that, or they don't do that, the sale is still valid, it's not a problem. So if you hear there are some people who do not sell, but they call chametz gamur, it's because of that. What is the idea of, what is chametz gamur that if a person doesn't want to sell it, should not sell? The chametz gamur that if a person does not want to sell, is any chametz that a person will be over on it, bal yirae bal yimatzeh. That means, if the chametz is not mixed into other things, let's say you have Rice Krispies. And in Rice Krispies, there is a little bit amount of chametz used as something, as malt flavoring. And that chametz is not a kazait in the box. You don't have a kazait of chametz in there, right? That is, even though you're not allowed to eat it, or maybe, I don't know exactly, it's a batel or not batel, I didn't do my checking to see if it's batel or not, but even though we don't eat it, but that thing could be easily sold because the amount of chametz that's there is not something that a person will be over on it. But if you have cake or cookies or pasta, Cheerios, that the amount of chametz that is in the box is a kazait at least, a person should try to, if a person doesn't want to sell it, a person should try to get rid of it. This way a person would not have to deal with his mechirat chametz. You still are going to sell your Rice Krispies and cornflakes and stuff because of that little amount of chametz that is in it. But those things, even if the sale was not chas v'shalom, a full-fledged sale, a 1 in 10,000 chance, still not, you know, person will not be over isura bal yirae bal yimatzeh. So this is how the mechira works. It's also recommended that those things that a person can get rid of, a person should get rid of. Meaning half box of Cheerios and a half bottle of ketchups and the crumbs in your toasters and the stuff that you could get rid of it, get rid of it. You don't have to, you know, if it's not worth including it in a sale that, you know, a little, even if the sale is a little bit shady, it's better not to include those half-eaten things because generally nobody buys it. Even though I mentioned that the goy does a bulk job, he buys it bulk and sells it bulk, but it's better to make the sale more lean and clean and understandable to everyone, and that is how the mechirat chametz takes place. So therefore, the people who sell the chametz, they should know what chametz they have that they're selling, and they should definitely be in the understanding of selling it, and they give the permission to the rabbi to make the sale on their behalf. And they should mean it, because if they think it's just a little game that you're playing with a goy, then it will be a problem for everybody. I should mention that once a sale has taken place, any chametz that is found in the house is automatically included in that sale. So if you happen to find, by mistake, a box of cookies under somewhere in the house that was not put away with the chametz that you sold, this box of cookie is automatically included in the sale, because in the document of sale of chametz it says and any other chametz that are found in the person's possession. So therefore, all that chametz is sold. The chametz that is sold should be put away in a marked area and closed off clearly that no one would have access to it. You put sign on it, that's not your chametz, the chametz that is sold. Clear markup. This way no one will come to eat it. Is a person allowed to put that in the freezer? The halacha, yes. A person who has some stuff that needs to be kept frozen, he would put it in a section of the freezer and close it off, marked up, maybe in a box and sealed, put on a chametz that belongs to the goy, not to you, and it sits in the freezer. You're not responsible for it. If your freezer gets disconnected from the electricity and the stuff inside gets spoiled, it's not yours, it's the goy's, and you are not responsible for that. You're just doing the goy a favor. The goy asked you to put this in the corner of your freezer, right? With his own responsibility, you put it there with his own responsibility. It is not yours. it is his. So therefore, a person should go through his freezer, should go through his storage room, any chametz that they have, that they are selling, should be put all in one place, marked off, this is not yours, and the sale would take place on the 14th. There are halachos regarding the people who are going out of the country, and their time zone might be different than the time zone of where the chametz sale takes place. They should speak to the rabbi through which they are selling their chametz, so the rabbi will be able to accommodate the kind of a sale that at the time that the chametz is being sold, and at the time that the rabbi will buy it back at after Pesach, it will be a proper time for their time zone. So they should speak to the Rav and let him know. Also, the people who are going away for Pesach and they do not do bedikat chametz in their house the night of the 14th, they're not home the night of the 14th to do a proper bedikat chametz, a real bedikat chametz, and rather they are selling their whole apartment, right? It is a good idea that they would request from the rabbi that he would sell their chametz on the 13th. It's such a thing called mechirat yud gimel, which means the rabbi would make a separate deal, with the goy a day earlier. This way, when the time of bedikat chametz comes, their apartment is already not in their reshut, and the chiyuv of bedikat chametz of their apartment would not be chal on them. It's a good idea, Mishnah Berurah says. It's a good thing to do. If a person didn't do it, it's still okay. But if a person understands that they're not going to be home, they neither bedikat chametz, they're already packing out and leaving for the whole Pesach beforehand, they should request a mechira of Yud Gimel, a possible mechira of Yud Gimel, that the chametz should be sold on the 13th. That concludes the idea of mechira chametz. I mentioned yesterday, the area where you store the chametz that will be sold does not need to be checked. You could seal it off, and you don't have to clean it, you don't have to check it. Any chametz that's there would automatically be included in the among the chametz that would be sold. Mimir Hashem, next session we're going to talk about kashering, and then after that we'll talk about the actual bedikat chametz, of what areas need bedika, and the people who go out of town, what they should do with the bedika. We'll cover it, Mimir Hashem, in bedikat chametz. Next session we'll talk about kashering different things in the house.